Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Very good Thursday morning to you. Yeah, when you hear that music, that's mood music, right? I mean, something's going on that is disturbing. And really what it is, it's a clash of bizarro world, right? Which exists in the Twitterverse. The land of the law doesn't matter, it's just what I feel, and because I feel that, I want it to be real. And so, the truth doesn't matter, the law doesn't matter, the process doesn't matter, it's just what I want and what I say. That's the only thing that matters. And we see the collision of that in our culture. Now more than ever. And so yesterday was, another example of that. And I want to play out, first of all, if you didn't watch, I don't know how long he spoke, maybe about an hour. If you didn't watch that, the Attorney General for the state of Kentucky, his name is Daniel Cameron, happens to be a Republican, but I don't particularly give a shit about that. And if you know me, that's true. Good leaders are good leaders, and I didn't know who he was, and he to me, is the kind of leader that the nation needs. Articulate, bright. You know, spoke to everybody in the room. And so I'd never seen him speak before. Evidently, he spoke at the Republican convention. I did not know that. So I was like, who is this dude? And so as I watched, and he specifically addressed this collision of the world the way you want it to be, vice the way the world is, right? And the way the world is really different from the way it exists in Twitter and in the world of the cancel culture, where you could just make people go away. Well, where in the world of courtrooms, in the world of laws, in the world of evidence, in the world of juries who have to consider facts and laws, Twitter doesn't matter. Now, if you can imagine such a reality as that, that Twitter doesn't matter, what my feelings don't matter, I don't, like, what the hell are you talking about? Exactly. And that's the collision we saw yesterday. And I want to play a little clip. And we'll see if this works. It should, but God only knows what's inside of these things. But it's a clip of the Attorney General of Kentucky speaking specifically to influencers and other people like that, people on social media, and. He essentially calls them out and says, you don't know what you're talking about. And so that's the collision that you there's a press conference going on in Louisville. The officers that were shot there last night are both stable and will survive their injuries, and a suspect is in custody. So anyway, this is from his press conference yesterday, Daniel Cameron.
If we simply act on emotion or outrage, there is no justice. Mob justice is not justice. Justice sought by violence is not justice. It just becomes revenge. And in our system, criminal justice isn't the quest for revenge. It's the quest for truth, evidence, and facts. And the use of that truth as we fairly apply our laws. Our reaction to the truth today says what kind of society we want to be. Do we really want the truth, or do we want a truth that fits our narrative?
That's a pretty good statement right there. We've crafted the narrative. The narrative is the police are hunting black men across this country. The narrative is, there's a whole series of them, and we'll get to them in the second hour. The narrative is our COVID response was a disaster in spite of the fact that the United States is the lowest developed nation in the entire world when it comes to fatalities, right? The facts are that every president in a fourth year has nominated a Supreme Court justice, and if they own the Senate, it went forward, and if they didn't, the nomination did not. Those are the facts. And so this world we live in today where it doesn't matter what the facts are, it just matters what you feel and how you get on social media and you say, because I feel this way, this is what should happen. So the facts are irrelevant. You know, so yesterday I hear him talking, I'm like, holy shit, man. That's what I said. Holy shit, who is this guy?
Do we want the facts? Or are we content to blindly accept our own version of events? We as a community must make this decision. I understand that Miss Breonna Taylor's death has become a part of a national story and conversation. But we must also remember the facts and the collection of evidence in this case are different than cases elsewhere in the country. Each is unique and cannot be compared. There will be celebrities, influencers, and activists who, having never lived in Kentucky, will try to tell us how to feel, suggesting they understand the facts of this case and that they know our community and the Commonwealth better than we do. But they don't. Let's not give in to their attempts to influence our thinking or capture our emotions. At the end of the day, it is up to us. We live here together. We work here and raise our families here together. I urge those protesting on the streets to remember this. Peaceful protests are your right as an American citizen. Instigating violence and destruction are not. I've spoken with both Mayor Fisher and Governor Beshears in the days leading up to this announcement, and I urge them to do what is necessary to maintain law and order and to protect our cities and our people.
Hey, NBC News viewers.
That's from NBC News, obviously. I'm watching that yesterday, and as I said, who is this guy? But yesterday was another one of those instances where reality collides with fantasy land. Fantasy land that's fueled by a media that's not, you know, loyal to the truth, by reporters that aren't loyal to the truth. It's fueled by social media that then dumps gasoline on a narrative of, right, no-knock warrant, which this was not, on a narrative that said they went in and shot, when in fact they knocked. And I'm sitting there listening to it, knowing what I haven't read a whole lot about it, but I've read some, right? And what do I know? No-knock warrant, they go in. And they shoot up the place. Well, the truth is, they announced their presence. They knocked on the door. They breached the door because they were serving a warrant. Her boyfriend then shot the first police officer to come through the door. Shot him in the thigh. They returned fire, and she was killed. And I was sitting here going, holy shit. I didn't know that. So again, reality, you know, completely fucks up their narrative. The narrative that you see on Twitter that, and again, I saw as recently as the 20th of September, a major, you know, I think it was Politico or The Hill, one of those two, you know, writing about no-knock warrants. And so this narrative, this narrative in our nation that's fueled by, you know, this thing the media has become, and then it's fuel injected by social media. My question is, where does that lead the country? Where does that take us as a nation? And so we'll talk about that in hour number two with the Mensa brothers. Where does this ultimately take us all? That yesterday you saw that collision between laws, courtrooms, evidence, and a grand jury that said no. And when he says, right, the officers exercised their right of self-defense after they were engaged by gunfire, you're sitting there going, oh, shit, here we go. And then you're watching, you know, people, you know, my nephew sent me a picture of, you know, of U-Hauls pulling up into Louisville's filled with signs and baseball bats and all kinds of shit. Here we go. Reality and fantasy land collide. And then people that have other agendas, be they groups like Antifa, be they, you know, other social groups, who are looking to advance their own cause, now will use this to destroy parts of a city and make a point on national TV all the time, searching for some kind of powerful video, because that's what it's all about these days. So in the course of reading yesterday, I see this article in my favorite news publication, and I say that proudly, and that is the Wall Street Journal. It's an opinion piece. It's entitled, Before Reporting Became, quote, journalism, unquote. The subheadline is, Writers subdued their egos and encouraged readers to think. Nowadays, it's all about arousing emotion. Written by Lance Morrow. Now, who's Lance Morrow? I don't really know who Lance Morrow is, but I'm going to read you parts of this. Now, the other thing I'll tell you is that on the in the Los Angeles Times is a headline, if I can find it. LATimes.com. Oh, they've taken it down. The headline was "One Officer Indicted in Breonna Taylor." And what was noticeable about the headline was its lack of it was simply a factual statement in a headline, which you don't see very often. And I saw it and I was like, whoa, you don't see that often, that it was just a headline about the fact of what the grand jury did. So anyway, let me share with you a little bit of this piece. My father's favorite word of dismissal was phony. As a young man, he worked for the Philadelphia Inquirer. For him and his fellow reporters, phony was the watchword, an instinct. That period in the late 30s going into the war had the atmosphere of a movie by Frank Capra, who was big on newspaper reporters as every man types. Right? You can imagine the black and white movie, right? The guy in the fedora with the press thing sticking out of the band of his hat, right? That guy. You know, every day, wife and kids, you know, gates broken on the way out of the yard every morning, shit like that. After the calamitous sucker punch of the Great Depression, a guy didn't want to be a sap. That generation of reporters would rather have died or moved permanently to Albany, New York, than call themselves journalists. The term itself was phony. When young Henry Luce, who went on to co-found the Time Life Empire just out of Yale, he showed up for a job with the Chicago Daily News as a leg man for the columnist Ben Hecht, who, with Charles MacArthur, would write the front page. That's the end of a parenthetical. He carried a walking stick and a briefcase. The editor looked him up and down and said, "Ah, Mr. Luce, a journalist, I see." The lesson I absorbed as a boy was that the work of reporting called for a disinfected mind that busied itself with little guy sympathies and self-effacing clarity on available facts collected conscientiously. The ideal was fairness. Let the reader decide. It would not have occurred to my father or his fellow reporters or to me in my apprentice days in Buffalo at the Buffalo News or the Washington Star, to drape the facts with adjectives and adverbs and attitude. The eye of the city editor, the great Sid Epstein at the Star, for example, was vigilant and scathing. Who gives a damn what you think? As a sensitive person, or God forbid, one of us on the newspaper staff, had declared that something or other made them feel uncomfortable or unsafe or constituted a microaggression, the answer would have been an incredulous stare. So what? If it happened again, you're fired. The journalistic paragon of my youth was David Broder, who covered politics for the Star and later moved to the Washington Post. He was everything that a reporter in the old model ought to be. Dispassionate, nonpartisan, encyclopedic in his knowledge of a subject. Broder had not a trace of the disabling egotism, ruthless ambition, or partisan zealotry that afflicts media stars today. It would be silly to idealize the old journalism, which had its problems, including excessive deference to authority and massive sins of omission in the scope of its curiosity. Anyway, it belonged to a different world. But it had its virtue, the work, subduing the ego of the reporter, implied respect for the independent mind of the reader. Alas, the independent, nonpartisan mind went out of fashion years ago in politics, media, academia, and even corporate life. Emphasis on the integrity of the individual judgment has all but disappeared in the face of identity politics, the religion of diversity, and the radical corruption of American universities. The effect everywhere intensified by this year's obsessive and, one might say, compulsory radicalism. America won't be an honest country until those influences have been defeated or have burned themselves out. It may take years or a generation or two. Yeah, I was like, holy shit. Who is this guy? Who is this guy? For now, in the honest insanious of 2020, so the year of insanity of 2020, we are afflicted by a pandemic of media phoniness, plastering the facts with attitudes, tilting the story to the party line, moralizing it, sentimentalizing it, propagandizing it, is the way of noisy, distracted cable news and increasingly of all media. Not a sparrow falls without the New York Times in its news columns telling the reader that the bird was shot by a white supremacist. News is laid before a citizen's mind so packaged and tarted up with narrative lines that the simple facts are often impossible to discern. This is not honest reporting, but garish, partisan fabulation. How about that? Its object is not to inform or to encourage reflection, but to stimulate feelings. Let not the listener or viewer or reader be detained by thought, but instead move briskly on to emotions, which are addictive and highly profitable drugs, in which big media traffic. Read clicks and views. News media become crack houses of information and, all the while, ruthless participants in the struggle for political power and for what the Parsons of Morning Joe called the soul of America. Journalism's metaphysical decline proceeds parallel to the deterioration of American politics. In both fields, we behold the lingering death of public trust. The energies that flow into the vacuum left by the departure of trust are self-righteousness, violence of mind, and an ineffable stupidity, the civic despair and hysteria that have become the style of poor, miserable 2020. How about that? So who is this guy? Right? I thought, I read that, I was like, wow. Who is Lance Morrow? It's honestly, here's another one. An honest conversation about race. Yikes. But here's who he is. He was born in 1939 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Obviously, his dad worked for the Inquirer. He's an American essayist and writer, chiefly for Time magazine. He won the 1981 National Magazine Award for Essay and Criticism and was a finalist for the same award in 1991. He has the distinction of winning more Man of the Year articles than any other writer in the magazine's history, and it has appeared on The Late Show with Craig Ferguson and The O'Reilly Factor. He is a former professor of journalism at the university and university professor at Boston University. Born in Philadelphia, raised in Washington, D.C., attended Gonzaga College High School. His father, Hugh Morrow, was the chief aide to New York governor and later vice president, Nelson Rockefeller. He graduated magna cum laude at Harvard University in 1963 with a BA in English literature. Yeah, you don't do that being a dumbass. He joined Time in 1965 after a brief stint with the now defunct Washington Star as a reporter. In 1967, he covered the Detroit race riots, the Vietnam War, the Nixon administration, and the Watergate scandal. Anyway, I'll put the article, the link to it and the article, because some people can't read Wall Street Journal stuff. I will copy the article and put it into the first hour post. But, I mean, imagine that. Imagine that somebody would write an article about the facts of what happened. I believe the statement was the Attorney General spoke from Frankfort, Kentucky. The grand jury, I think it's the grand jury from Louisville. And so imagine if somebody would simply dare to report the facts. The facts are that on that night, you had a previous boyfriend of Breonna Taylor listing her home as his place of residence. A warrant issued for his arrest. Police have a warrant. It's not a no-knock warrant. Corroborated by another witness from the apartment complex, they knocked on the door and announced their presence. Nobody comes to the door. And which is the tragedy, right? Nobody yells, who's there, you know? This is the police, open up. They choose not to. Police come through the door. Instead of, you know, putting their hands up, her boyfriend, believing it to be an intruder evidently, he opens fire on the first detective, who he shoots in the thigh. They then return fire. The boyfriend is not hit. She is killed. Those are the facts. That's the evidence. And so as you begin to break it down, right, she is a victim in a justifiable police response when they were engaged. So, but is that gonna make anybody happy in this world that we live in, where it's certainly never about the facts, but when you hear him say things like, who cares what you think? Do it again, right? Do it again and you'll be fired. I just, as I read it, and then I will tell you, I think, though, there's two paragraphs in here that really, in my opinion, I thought were profound. One paragraph is this: the journalistic paragon of my youth was David Broder, who covered politics for the Washington Star and later moved to the Washington Post. He was everything that a reporter of the old model ought to be: dispassionate, nonpartisan, encyclopedic in his knowledge of a subject. He had not a trace of the disabling egotism, ruthless ambition, and partisan zealotry that afflict media stars today. And that is the truth. And so when on a daily basis, when you read and you look for the truth and you try to stay informed, that's what you wade through. The disabling egotism for clicks, the ruthless ambition to make more money and to be higher on the click list, the partisan zealotry exhibited by reporters that afflict quote-unquote media stars today. And what are we talking about? We're talking about our reporters and our, quote, journalists. And then, but I think this is, to me, the most profound thing he says in the entire piece. Alas, the independent nonpartisan mind went out of fashion years ago in politics, media, academia, and even corporate life. Emphasis on the integrity of individual judgment has all but disappeared in the face of identity politics, the religion of diversity, and the radical corruption of American universities. The effect everywhere intensified by this year's obsessive and one might say compulsory radicalism. America won't be an honest country until those influences have been defeated or have burned themselves out. It may take years, a generation or two. To me, that is one of the most profound things and one of the most true things I've seen. And you're going to hear us talk about it in the second hour. How does this end? Where does all of this take us? Where this lack of interest in the truth, no matter how convenient it is, the lack of people that are willing to talk about the truth, where does all this take us? And then what we're going to see, and we're going to see it again in the George Floyd case. We're going to see the facts and the evidence come back, and there's going to be another meltdown as, right, we reconcile the things that were going on that day. Him on fentanyl and meth, having, you know, a heart condition, very frail physically in spite of his 6'6" frame. He's got all that going on inside of his body. The police and their actions. And that's going to get reconciled in public, in front of a jury somewhere, probably not in Minneapolis, who's going to be asked to look at the evidence that's allowed, going to be asked to balance that between what was required of those police officers and what they actually did. And then they're going to decide. And know this, if one juror doesn't decide, if one juror is not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt, that's a hung jury, and they'll do it again. That's all it takes, one juror in those kind of cases. And so this will play itself out again. And we will continue to have this collision of Twitterverse and what's true and our system of justice, right? And that's the only place it collides. It used to collide in the newspaper, where you may think something, but here's a story about the facts. And these are, as you know, Mr. Morrow, summa cum laude from Harvard. That's not bullshit, right? As Mr. Morrow articulates, right? Keep your opinions to yourself. You're a reporter. Your job is to prevent the facts and allow the reader to think. We don't do that anymore. We don't do that anymore. So that collision will take place again. And then we have a question as a culture. Do we accept the popular notion of what the truth is? As defined for us by Twitter? As defined for us by social media? Is that what we do? The tyranny of Twitter? The tyranny of social media? Is that what we define as true? So what is the coin of the realm? How loud you can scream and how viral you can get your video. That's what rules the day. And in what kind of world does that rule the day in? In a world with weak leaders that won't stand up and say this is wrong. And let me tell you, that's why Daniel Cameron to me was so impressive yesterday. You know? Right, let me tell you, that guy would have run for president pretty soon. I'll vote for his ass. Because that's what leaders are supposed to do. Leaders are not supposed to shrink when it gets difficult. They're supposed to stand up. And they're supposed to stand up for what's right and what's true for everybody. And we see the president of the United States struggle with it. Right? We see, you know, leaders across the country. So, yeah, in hour number two, we're going to talk about that. Where does this end? How does this go? And we've seen the nation digest this shit and just keep going. Nothing changes it. And we don't have a real, we won't have an honest conversation. And I've said this since since the Floyd thing. At one point, are we going to have a round table, right, in which all these different people come to the table and begin to have a discussion about it? Who's going to sponsor that? Why haven't we watched it on TV? Where police unions sit there, where police department chiefs sit there, where activists sit there, where social workers sit there, where politicians sit there, and they have a respectful conversation about the complexities of each one of their own viewpoints and what they see. And I haven't seen it. Which makes me like think, what the fuck is going on in our country? Where are the leaders in this country that will make that happen and put it on TV so everybody can watch? Everybody can watch. So, good morning to you. With all that said, Will Cosentini, Jeff Kenny, Tim Lynch will join me in about 30 minutes. We'll check news headlines here in a few. And I'm not optimistic about the future of the country, because something has to convince people that the fantasy land of Twitter, of Facebook, is not what's real. And that if you're going to participate in this dialogue, that maybe you ought to be a reader, that maybe you ought to look at history, maybe you ought to inform yourself, because the only thing that is relevant here isn't just your feelings. There's things like laws. There's things like evidence. And how you feel, I know if you're under the age of 40, you think your feelings are really fucking important, but guess what? They're not. They're not. Most high school kids figure that out now. You get raised your whole life as a young person today, and every time somebody farts wrong, you get asked, how does that make you feel? How does that make you feel? How does that make you feel? And then you graduate from high school and you find out, guess what? Nobody gives a fuck how you feel. But, you know, so anyway, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Happy Thursday. This is easy today. This is dedicated to Daniel Cameron, the Attorney General in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. I thought, sir, that you were a great representative of what leaders ought to be in this country. And I hope others that watched that yesterday will look at that and follow in his footsteps. So, well done.
We fight our country's battles in the air of the Mississippi. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Old-fashioned concept there, winning. Not so important yesterday. Not so important today. What matters is that you feel good about yourself. That's all that matters. And there's no greater example of that than the United States Navy. And the rest of the DOD following down that road. Right? We want you to feel good about you. Whether you're mission capable, whether you're able to do your shit, that's all, you know, that all comes well after you feeling good about you. And to that end, Will Cosentini, you'll hear it in the second hour, but Will, Will sends a letter that the Secretary of the Navy wrote about his first 100 days in his current position as Secretary of the Navy. He just completed his first 100 days. And he sends out this message. And so he says, we should probably talk about this when we were working up the agenda, right, for hour two today. So I read it, and I email back or text back to the group, to the Mensa brothers. I say, there's nothing in here. It's all bullshit. And Will sends back, exactly. Nothing in there about making the United States Navy the greatest Navy on the planet. Nothing about mission accomplishment. Nothing. I said, oh, you're right. Maybe we should talk about that. So, yeah. So that's what... Hey, that's what life is about. As long as you feel good about you, and as long as we're fulfilling our obligation to you relative to your benefits, you know, fuck it if you can't do what you're supposed to do. Fuck it if we can't get ships repaired on time in dry dock. Fuck it if you can't drive your ship without crashing into somebody else. Fuck it if you suck at damage control. Fuck it, fuck it, fuck it. None of the gateway measurements are important. Just, you need to feel good about you, right? Yeah, because that's what life's about, you feeling good about you. It's not about the truth. It's not about evidence. It's not about grand juries. It's not about what's right. It's about just feel good about yourself. And we're gonna con you into feeling good about yourself. But let me tell you the true path to esteem. Esteem is earned. It's not given by any series of benefits. It is earned in life by that what you do in life. By specifically those things you achieve in your life. In a variety of realms in your life, in the spectrum of your life, esteem is earned. It's not given away. The illusion of happiness that you're holding out for people is the path to a shitty place. But anyway, I digress. Currently, in Quantico, it is partly sunny and 67. Camp Lejeune is partly sunny, 72. 29 Palms, sunny and 79. So fall is upon us, kind of, sort of. Camp Pendleton, sunny and 66. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy in 76. Okinawa, dark cloudy 79. Down under on the northern coast of Australia, it is clear, dark in 79. And in Oslo, Norway, it is partly sunny and 56. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, it is sunny and 65. That is a look at your weather here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. More of All Marine Radio on a, what day is today? Thursday? Coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back, and that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, and he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis. But sometimes, reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara. And you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I was a sailor, I was lost at sea.
All right, to the news we go. Top stories in Stars and Stripes. VA has denied 78% of disability claims from burn pits. Yeah, I don't. You know, the whole burn pit thing is interesting in terms of it. You know, you come home with a malady that you can't identify, and you know, and burn pits were used all over Iraq and Afghanistan, and then not always the most discretion used relative to what went into those things, and then the toxic fumes. So the narrative goes, and so you come home with something, and, you know, were you in proximity to a burn pit? Well, hell, everybody was, you know. So that in the news. Marine Corps begins the field testing pistol that will replace models used since the Cold War. Now, the Cold War, I mean, I think they're talking about I think they're talking about the 9mm. The Cold War, it sounds like a long time ago. It's like the 90s, right? That's, I mean, when the Soviet Union went away. The Marine Corps Systems Command began fielding the Sig Sauer pistol based on the company's model P320 earlier this month. The Marine Corps said in a news release on Wednesday, the M18 modular handgun system will replace all other pistols in the Marine Corps inventory, including the M9, the M9A1, the M45A1, and the M007, the statement said. All Marine Corps units with a pistol will receive an M18, said Brian Nelson. The Army began fielding the Sig Sauer pistol in 2017. And so, a new pistol. Look, what's a pistol for? Stand of duty? If you ever go someplace where there's bad guys, your pistol is like, the joke was the only thing it's good for in Iraq or Afghanistan was if you're about to get captured and cut into 1,000 pieces, you can kill yourself. Other than that, grab yourself a rifle if you want to help. And so, yeah, your pistol. The other thing it's good for is that it will, it gets you out of carrying a rifle if you have to go to the chow hall. Yeah, much easier to sit down and eat if you have a pistol on. Next headline, Congress approves a major bill aiming to prevent veteran suicide. The House passed sweeping bipartisan legislation Wednesday that would give up to $174 million during the next 5 years to state and local organizations that provide suicide prevention services to veterans and their families. The House approved the bill without objection. So anyway, veteran suicide, always in the news. Okay. So don't be afraid. Introduce a veteran to post-traumatic winning. Send them this way. Nearly 500 former military and civilian leaders sign a letter supporting Biden. Who do we know that's on the letter? The letter is signed by 489 people. Anybody we know? Let's see. Who's absent? Jim Mattis is absent. John Bolton, absent. Who's there? Retired Air Force General Charles Boyd. He signed the letter. I don't know who. I fervently believe that military officers should not be involved in presidential politics, even when retired, Boyd said, who is the only former POW to have reached a four-star rank and served as deputy commander of U.S. European Command. But this year is different. Donald Trump's assault on the rule of law that makes democracy possible has been so egregious, I've decided to speak out. So everybody says that what they believe, then they say, yeah, but I've decided to speak out. I don't see anybody else. Retired Navy Admiral Charles Steve Abbott. So I don't see a whole lot of marquee people on that list. the United States Air Force Academy has its first black superintendent. Lieutenant General Richard Clark is the new superintendent of the Air Force Academy. Clark is a 1986 Air Force Academy graduate, is the first former commandant of cadets to come back for the three-star job. How about that? He's also the first black superintendent of the school in its 66-year history. So that in the news today in Stars and Stripes. Top stories in the Wall Street Journal. Jobless claims hold steady at a high level, just under 900,000. So the recovery seems to be, and again, until you get restaurants going, until you get, that service sector going, I don't know that number's coming down. So this idea, I just think it's the craziest discussion in the world. What if Trump won't leave the White House? It's like, oh my God, are we that hurt for content today? Breonna Taylor decision sparks protests in cities across the United States. There's another story that I haven't read. Breonna Taylor case outcome isn't unusual, review of police shooting shows. Academic study indicates very few officers are charged with crimes related to shooting on the job. The question is why? Okay, and I'll get to that. I won't do that today, but the question is why? So it's I find studies of studies interesting. So you have a study that studies things. So when you aggregate the studies, what do you find and what are the footnotes? I know this isn't your normal fucking show, right? Because I mean, who would think of such a thing? And then one more. Europe fights a second wave of COVID-19 without full blown lockdowns, right? And this is what I was talking about last week about the University of Notre Dame. It's our responsibility as cultures to find a way through it. This notion of we're all going to stay home forever. I mean, are you shitting me? And we'll stay home for 2 years. We'll stay home for 2 years as somebody develops a vaccine. What? Okay. And then what happened? If you look at universities around the country, what's happened is they've gone back. Kids have gone to parties. They've gotten sick. Right? I haven't read about any fatalities because of it. Because at that age group, there tends to be very few. And then what happens is people took it more seriously in those age groups. They learned. And life has gone on. Social distancing. If you watch a Notre Dame football game, you even see people in the stadium. They're socially distanced, but they're in the stadium. Holy shit. Pretty amazing. So finding a way through it. What's interesting is, where did this notion come from? Where did this notion come from that we could just all stay at home forever? And that would be the way it would be. So anyway, USNI News, one of my favorites. From the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Berger, U.S. should restructure Indo-Pacific force posture. How about that? There's some interesting stuff going on. Headline, video, Marine F-35 Bravos underway on a UK aircraft carrier. How about that? Marines over in the UK, plussing them up. Navy releases first tranche of USS Thresher documents. Now, for those of you who don't know, on April 10th of 1963, the USS Thresher, a submarine, was lost along with its crew of 129 sailors off the coast of New England. Yeah, it's no small deal. A Freedom of Information lawsuit from retired Navy Captain James Bryant a former Thresher class submarine commander compelled the Navy to release the documents on a rolling basis starting today. And there's a PDF. It's the first of it's 300 pages. It's the first of a series of unclassified documents. Yeah, the Thresher was, it all of a sudden one day was gone. And there was not a whole lot being said about it. Next headline, Marine Corps conducting campaign of learning to wring out force design 2030 plans. Campaign of learning. The Marine Corps is asking questions about its force design plan and gaining answers through a flurry of experimentation and wargaming to help quickly reshape the force to deter or win a fight against China. As part of phase three of the force design development, leaders say there is a campaign of learning approach that is constantly generating new questions faster than the service can answer them to ensure nothing is overlooked as the Marine Corps divests its legacy equipment to pay for the biggest force overhaul in decades. Commandant of the Marine Corps David Berger said today during a speech at Modern Day Marine virtual conference, and let me tell you, I'll find that and we'll listen to the whole thing, that an intense effort went into producing the Force Design 2030, released just 8 months after he took command, intentionally left some questions unanswered so they could be informed by quantitative analysis of war games and experiments. We're not going to determine that in a crisis or in a conflict that we will need only long-range weapon systems or that we only need short-range weapon systems. We need both. We're going to have to operate and fight in depth. The magic of it is to find the right balance between the capabilities we need and how much stuff costs, what we can afford to do. I'm very confident that we've made the right decisions after 1 year of studying it pretty hard and left enough room for us to learn in the next 2 or 3 years and make adjustments going forward, he said. We don't know yet exactly the right balance, and that's intentional. Not because we haven't thought our way through it, but we need to rely on our own Marine units experimenting in real tactical scenarios to inform back to the Marine Corps. Okay, here's the right balance you need of aircraft and ground fires. Here's the balance you need of satellite communications and high frequency and very high frequency. Here's the right balance you're going to need in terms of operational logistics down to tactical. We intentionally did not try to get down to 100% answer because we can't. We're leaving a fair amount of margin over the next 2 to 3 years for the Fleet Marine Force to inform force design. So anyway, we'll explore that a little bit. See what the Commandant has to say. Navy is learning from past attempts to eliminate bias in the fleet. Your United States Navy, hard at work. We love it. And then the headline I mentioned a few minutes ago from the Commandant, and that is the U.S. should restructure Indo-Pacific force posture. What does that mean? Quote, we have to spread out. We have to factor in Guam. We have to have a dispersed, distributed force laydown in the Pacific that allows us to work with all the allies and partners in the region and deter countries like China from asserting themselves in a manner that tries to rewrite all of the global sort of norms that have been well established for 50, 60, 70 years and which has led to all the economic growth in the Indo-Pacific. So our posture must change, both the Marine Corps and I think the Joint Force as well. So what does that mean? We got to spread out? Got to put people on Guam? Got to put people in the Palaus? Got to spread out, got to make sure they enjoy the economic benefits and get our asses out of simply Japan and off Okinawa. Spread out. Interesting. So, USNI News, man. I'll tell you, that if you check that on a regular basis, quality stuff. Modern Day Marines going on virtually. And I want to see if they have the Commandant's... Do they have a speech online? Don't see it. But, normally Modern Day Marine would be going on in Quantico right now. But it is not. Stand by. Here's what retired Marine Corps Commandant General Krulat thinks about November's election. By General Charles Krulak, retired. There's an axiom in the U.S. Marine Corps that states, quote, a good leader never leaves her dead and wounded on the battlefield. Interesting, the gender of that quote, which is quintessentially Krulakian. Right? Every Marine who goes into harm's way is either killed or wounded, deserves to be brought home by fellow Marines with honor and respect, even if that return is on a hospital litter or a flag-draped casket. Our commander-in-chief has sorely tested that axiom. As the Atlantic reported, the president has applied the words losers and suckers to those who have given their last full measure to our country. This November, our nation will exercise the right to vote, a right protected by the men and women who have served. I know most Americans have already lined up behind a candidate, so I can only urge that those still deciding to remember that the world will be watching how we use that right. Are we still a nation that believes that character counts? Are we still guided by a strong moral compass? Obviously not a fan of the president's. So once again, you know, look, everybody, every retired general officer, it seems to me, says this. I don't believe that general officers should say, but because of the times we're living in, here I go. Why don't we just do away with that charade, eh? But don't expect to have any, if you want to just become a political commentator and a citizen, then, you know, don't start your piece with General USMC retired, okay? Just sign it Chuck Krulak. I'm just a citizen just like you guys. So don't live in both worlds, right? Live in one or the other. Okay, top five stories in early bird. One, reshape from within. How Berger plans to transform the Corps without a budget increase. I would just say this. I still have not seen how the Marine Corps believes that this small number of ships with embarked Marines is going to traffic areas like the South China Sea undetected by the Chinese fishing fleet. I believe that if you war game that stuff, and if you have somebody like General Van Riper on the other side of the war game, that the vast majority of those will be destroyed, period. They're targets. Can we have drones that stalk those? I think we can. Will those drones emit their position and therefore give away the position of our ships? I believe they will be able to. Can we have a whole bunch of them out there doing that? I believe they're not expensive to do. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Yeah, I ships are not easy to protect. And when you intend to operate inside, what's that area, right? The forward edge of the battle, I can't remember what it is, inside the something zone, the weapons engagement zone, the WES, or something like some shit like that. Hold on. I've got a slide. I've got a slide somewhere. Hold on. I've got to find my... the first island chain. It's not that. It is the... There's the first island chain. It's not that. I've got these maps I keep. Yeah. Here's the DOD budget. Damn it. Is this it? Disputed Islands. This is the 9 dash line. But I had that line. I know the name of it. Anyway, so you're going to fight within their effective missile range, right? And you're somehow or other going to shake their navy, shake their fishing boats that are going to inform on you, shake the other boats that are out there spying on you, and you and your boat are going to, you know, I just, it, to me, it's a, I don't know. I think it's a world according to GARP. That's why, to me, you know, treaties with Vietnam, treaties with the Philippines are huge in this. So imagine if you're in Taiwan, if you're spread out, and I think General Berger's right about it, you got to diversify, you got to get off Okinawa, and you got to spread out. But imagine instead of being on boats, right, that you're ashore in the Philippines and you can move unabated through the Philippines, and you can do the same thing in Vietnam. Well, now they're screwed. And that's why that's got to happen. Number two, general becomes first black head of U.S. Air Force. So call me, I'm skeptical. Like all this war gaming and shit, I'm skeptical. And I'd feel much better if you had a guy like General Van Riper came out and says, you know, I was asked to participate and I did. And guess what? You know, this is, I think the Marine Corps is on the right path. Then you would have my attention. Until that time, sorry, boys, the world according to GARP. And to that end, I need to have Mark Kansian back on. He was just in the news again. He said, not so fast, Marine Corps. He said that way back in the spring. Pacific Air Force. Chinese propaganda targeting Anderson Air Force Base is an attempt to intimidate. Pacific Air Force is pushing back against a Chinese military propaganda video depicting an H-6K bomber targeting Anderson Air Force Base in Guam, calling it attempted intimidation. Oh, my God. In a first, Marine Corps F-35 fighters deploy aboard British aircraft carriers. Look, the British are so on their ass militarily, we've got to supply them jets now. And fly the son of a bitches. Good Lord. So much for our allies around the world. Number five, North Korea killed and burned a South Korean official. Yeah, this is no bullshit story, man. This kind of stuff, they gets them sideways. A South Korean official has been shot dead and burned by North Korean troops, according to South Korea's defense ministry. Seoul said the man, who worked for the fisheries department, disappeared from a patrol boat near the border and was later found in the North's waters. North Korean soldiers shot him, poured oil over his body, and set it on fire. It believed it was an anti-coronavirus measure? What? Oh, my God. The official, according to South Korea, on his patrol boat about 6 miles from the border with the North, near the island of Yongpyeong, when he disappeared on Monday. The 47-year-old father of two had left his shoes behind in the boat. It is believed he had been trying to defect, a rare but not unprecedented move. A North Korean patrol boat found the man, who was wearing a life jacket, at sea at about 15:30 local time. That would be 3:30 in the afternoon. They put gas masks on and questioned him from a distance before orders from a superior authority came and they killed the man. He was shot dead in the water. North Korean troops then burned the corpse while at sea. President Moon Jae-in, who's a very liberal leader of South Korea, called the killing shocking and said it could not be tolerated. He urged the North to take responsible measures over the attack. Come on, that dude is out of his mind. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, the Mensa brothers will join me here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.